Today's episode, I want to start with a question for our foreign audience living in Korea. How many of you have been surprised when realizing the importance of business cards over LinkedIn, or the prevalence of Naver over Google, and even how different the copywriting style is compared to the US or Europe? To help us understand these cultural differences and learn the most effective marketing strategies in Korea, we have invited Joel Roberts, the founder of El Company Global, a marketing consulting firm based in Seoul. During this episode, Joel will share the most important advertising platforms, how to effectively communicate with a Korean audience, key marketing trends for 2023, and many other insights on both B2C and B2B marketing. This episode can help a lot of your company. Don't miss it. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 7th episode of Korea Startup Podcast. Today, we are with Laida. Hello, Laida.
Hello, good afternoon.
And with Joel Roberts. Hello, Joel.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And well, Joel, you can start introducing a little bit yourself. Who are you?
Sure. My name is Joel. I am 31 years old. I'm from the U.S., originally from Washington, D.C., but I grew up in Minnesota. And I have been living here in Korea for about, on and off, 10 years. So I'd say total time in Korea, about 8 years. So I am originally a professional table tennis player. I've been playing ping pong since I was 7 years old. And that is actually how I first came to Korea back in 2010 or 11. I had a competition here. And essentially, I just stayed. I just kept coming back and forth for a long time. I've always been interested in business from back in the US since I was in high school. I did some real estate stuff. I had a small real estate company with my brother. So I've been always dibbling and dabbling in the business and side of things, even while living here in Korea. And then recently I rebranded a company that I had launched back in 2018. The new name is El Company. Mm-hmm. And that is how we met each other. Yeah, through that. So that's a little bit about me.
Okay. Yeah. So I have one. The first question, why El Global Company? Because you also have a YouTube channel in which you teach ping pong, and it's also El Tennis Table. Where does it come from?
El is actually just my name.
Okay, it's so like Joel, no? It's yeah, Joel. I had that suspicion, but I wasn't sure about it.
So in Korea, a lot of people don't even know my last name. My last name is Roberts. Mm-hmm. They know me as Joel. But in Korea, they always say the last name before the first name. So when people hear my name is Joel, they think, oh, his name is L, first name, and Joe is the last name. So L is sort of a name that some people, Korean people, know me by, and it's a nickname. Mm. So I just went with L Company because it's my company, essentially. So mm-hmm. L Company.
That sounds great. So we're going to go in deep about your company now in a few minutes. But I want to know first, like, if you feel playing ping pong professionally has helped you develop your career later on, like discipline or something that you feel it helped you in?
Well, absolutely. Ping pong and any sports really can help someone develop discipline. For ping pong, you know, you have to play professionally. You play 6-7 hours a day. And I've been doing that semi-professionally since I was 7. And then professionally, I'd say since I was 14. So by playing table tennis, just like any other sport, you have to wake up at a certain time every day and you have a regimen that you have to follow. So that teaches me, taught me discipline, I'd say. Sure. Yeah. And then I remember one time I went to China when I was 16 to play with my brother. And that's when I really saw the discipline side of things, watching like Chinese kids since they're 5 years old, you know, waking up every day, playing ping pong. And some of them lived in the center. They couldn't go home because it's China and they do everything like on that level. But yeah, certainly ping pong has taught me a lot about myself and following a schedule and performing. And then also ping pong is a very interesting game. It's just like any game, but you lose a lot. You win sometimes just as much as you lose. And that sort of always taught me how to control my anger when I was younger. So yeah, sure. Ping pong has taught me plenty.
Mm-hmm. And also about your background, you have wrote some speeches for the United Nations, right?
Say that one more time.
Did you write some speeches for the United Nations?
I have been doing quietly all my life, but especially here in Korea, a lot of consulting and working closely kind of behind the scenes with a lot of business people and some sort of politician types. I don't really talk about this publicly because
Okay.
I don't name names either, name drop, because I still, you know, work with a lot of these people. But yeah, I have written a speech that was presented for the United Nations a few years back. But I do a lot of those type of one-off type of things that I work with people on a consulting type of basis. Yeah.
And you don't have any type of background or studies related to marketing, right?
You
Or you
know what? I
do?
never went to university.
Okay.
When I was 17, I started my first business with my brother, a small real estate acquisitions company. And then that did pretty well, and we decided not to go to school. And I remember the moment I told my parents that we weren't going to university, because my dad has a he's got his PhD in chemistry, and he's very school-based, and my mom's the same way. But we told him, hey, you know, the real estate's going well. We're not going to go to school.
Wow.
They didn't take it very well, but you know, they were sort of semi-happy for us, I guess you could say. As far as school, no marketing background, just by doing and learning the actual business side of things. That's how I learned
And what
all
did you like from marketing? Like, what did was appealing to you in order to start in this field?
that. Marketing is just something that I love marketing. I love digital marketing. I've loved social media since the first time back in 2008 or 9 is the first time I got on Twitter right in the beginning. And so I've always loved to see how sort of internet marketers would market themselves and market other people's businesses. So it's just a passion of mine, I think, marketing.
Okay, so in your company, you have three main services, right? Can you explain a little bit all of them?
Marketing is the main. You said I have three.
Yeah, I
One, two,
heard that you
three.
said marketing, video,
Media.
video, like video
Video, yeah, video
creation,
production, yeah.
and
And
consulting.
consulting, sure.
Yes.
So really the main thing of our company is consulting.
Okay.
And the reason why it's we focus on consulting is because before I started L Company, I was doing consulting here and there for different people anyway. So I decided, hey, why not just start my own consulting firm and make it official instead of sort of working behind the scenes for other people? Let me start my own business and do it that way. So consulting is the main thing, but within consulting, we focus on we do video production. So we do run a couple other brands, whether they're social media platform, their video content. We do some YouTube shows for some people. There's really a lot. There's investor relations. We help people get funding as well for different things. There's really a lot. That's why I just say it's consulting, because we have so many different things that depending on what the client needs, so many, you know, needs that we try to answer and help people.
And who are your clients? Are them Korean companies, foreign companies, both of them?
We do both. Currently, our current list of clients are all Korean. We work with a skincare brand. We have an events company that we work with, a few hospitals here. Who else? Really, our clients are, there aren't any specific field. Anybody who needs marketing. So yeah, there's not any specific industry that we work with.
So you work in Korean as well, like in language Korean.
Right now, to be honest, it's mostly Korean, but some of our clients, they want help with global marketing. So obviously I speak English, so we help to promote their brands overseas as well. So whether it's a skincare brand who needs a more of a global audience, things like that. Yeah. So we do back and forth as well. And then recently from this year or this summer, we started doing the reverse, helping foreign companies and brands who are trying to market in Korea. Because I've been here for such a long time, so I have plenty of connections myself, so I can use the consulting side of things to really play matchmaker and help foreign companies, non-Korean companies, as they try to branch out here in Korea.
So I guess because marketing is a really broad topic, and I assume that depending on the country, it modifies a bit the strategy and how the people react to different type of strategies. So I guess you know how the consumers react in different type of places. What would you say is the main differences between Korean consumers, or what do Koreans like to see in marketing and other countries, for example, the US?
Well, we'll start with Korea. Korea is very, what's the word? it's a little cookie cutter. They don't get so creative with their marketing when it comes to, they do have viral videos, which was very big several years ago. So, but it's still typical. What they'll do is they'll hire a celebrity or A-list or B-list model, and then they'll just have a commercial. And then usually Korea, they like the funny type of commercials that you see on Facebook or YouTube, things like that. But it's very cookie cutter in a sense. They don't get too creative. There's a term in the US that we use called guerrilla marketing, where we'll really do whatever it takes to market a brand, whether it's article marketing, TikTok even. Just now, I feel like those type of platforms are becoming popular in Korea, and you see brands still using them. But there are still a lot of companies here in Korea who aren't even necessarily utilizing social media to market their services. So that's the first big difference between, I feel like, Korea and then non-Korean. If you go to a non-Korean brand and they're looking to market, everybody understands that they need to be on social. They understand they need to have the LinkedIn and the Facebook and Twitter, and they go down the line. The only problem with foreign brands, I'd say, is they know about those things, but they're either too lazy or they don't have the time to do all the things that they need to market their business successfully. I think those are the two big differences.
So I think, like you were mentioning, is really interesting. They don't use platforms like maybe Facebook or Instagram that much. So where do they put their advertisement? Where do they advertise their products and their services?
They're a little bit more old school here in Korea. They still believe in TV commercials, obviously. Obviously, if you go to the US, that old school media of newspaper and TV and billboards are dying. But here in Korea, they're actually still pretty strong in a sense. Like if a brand CEO is thinking, hey, what's the first thing I need to do to market my company? If they have a lot of money, first thing they think might is TV, and they maybe think billboard, things like that. And then at the most, they'll think Naver. So Korean version of Google, they'll have their Naver. They think that, okay, I'll need to spend money to get some commercials or some ads on a Naver blog or something like that. That is, I'd say for 70% is sort of the bulk of what they think they need to do in terms of marketing. This is actually very interesting. Yesterday, I was a sort of a guest panelist for a university here, and they were giving pitches. So I was watching their pitches. It was online, but they were giving their investor relations pitch from start to finish. 12 slides, and they were going through their ideas, a bunch of university students. They're going through their ideas, and then we were sort of I was giving them points and judging them. Whenever they got to the marketing side, it was always the same thing. It wasn't specific. It was, they had an image, a graphic of Instagram. They had a graphic of a Naver blog. And then maybe they had one other thing. And they would say, oh, for our marketing, we're going to market on Instagram, market on Naver, market on this platform. But they really weren't specific, and they didn't really know how to market their business to be successful. That's one takeaway I felt from just yesterday, an example of the Korean marketing sort of world.
And also I heard that KakaoTalk plays a good role now in this advertisement world.
They have a, say that again?
KakaoTalk, you can also put advertisements in KakaoTalk. Because I was reading some articles and they said that one of the main platforms to use is KakaoTalk. How does it work? Because I use KakaoTalk, but I never see any type of advertisement.
So it's a hard place to market because you're going to need a certain amount of capital to market there. If you go into your KakaoTalk, you're hardly be able to see it. I'll show you on my phone.
Yeah, like, I've never seen
it. I saw a lot of in the desktop of the computer. But not in there.
Right here. As soon as you go into your chat page, the only place to mark is right here. You see this?
Oh my God.
That's an ad.
I never realized.
If you click on that, then it'll go to a website. But to be honest, there's not a lot of variance on the type of ads you'll see here. You'll see some fashion brands and things like that, but you don't see a whole lot of variety here on KakaoTalk. But yeah, if you have the money, I'd say, if I was giving somebody advice, that is actually a fantastic place to market, but they're going to be very limited on who they allow to market here on.
Which is the price, more or less?
I actually don't even...
No idea.
No, because it's so They're only going to market brands that have sort of a partnership with Kakao. This isn't a some place where you can anybody can just if they have the money to upload them. Because you know how can Kakao monitor that? It's very stiff. If you're marketing on Twitter or Facebook, for example, if you can afford it or have the money, sure, anybody can market here. But they're very specific on who they're allowed to market here, in my opinion.
There is another thing that I heard. I don't know if it's true. Like, correct me if it's not true. That English advertisement is much more expensive than Korean advertisement here in Korea. Like, if a brand wants to reach foreign audience, it's much more expensive for them to do it. What do you think about that?
Well, it depends on where they're marketing. The price is going to be a little bit more, yes, for English. But you have to understand the reason for that. Korean brands, when they're making a commercial or making any type of content to market to a global audience, the first thing they think of is we need non-Korean foreign models. So just the hierarchy of what it takes, you'll have a production company, then you'll have a sort of a model agency or something like that, and then you have sort of the brand owner. So there's a lot of money that goes into it. Because a lot of these Korean brands, they don't necessarily have just non-Korean foreign friends or models or actors. So it's a process to get to film and create those type of marketing campaigns. So that's the reason why it's more expensive.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not necessarily just because they're speaking English or something like that. It's just because there's a whole process. And you have to sort of go through the process for a lot of those brands. If you're going to hire a model and hire a translator to translate all your content for you, things like that. Yeah, that's the reason.
Okay.
It's a bit more expensive.
And also, you were mentioning now Naver. And I also heard that one of the main problems of Korean companies to reach a global audience is that because they are in Naver, they are not in Google. It's much more difficult for foreigners to find them.
Correct.
Are you also providing SEO services or not?
I do. So, but it depends on the client. If a client wants a more of a global audience, then typically what I'll do is I will set up their website for them, make their website friendly for foreign audiences. So it's ranks on Google. And then I'll implement usually a article marketing strategy where I'll flood their page, their website with English content about their services or about their brand. That way it'll starts to rank a little bit more on Google. And then vice versa, if it's a company brand that needs to be here locally, what you said was exactly right. A lot of foreigners or people living in Korea, they're not, if they can't speak Korean, they're not necessarily on Naver, they're on Google. So you might have a situation where a service or a business here in Korea is on Naver, but it's not on Google. And if it's not on Google, well, then a foreigner who doesn't like Naver or is not good at using Naver isn't going to find it, and then vice versa. So I always recommend doing both simultaneously. But that's just one of those small things that people don't even realize. If they just realize that, then they could make the adjustment and make sure that people know about their brand or their services by being on both Google and Naver. But everybody's different. I know people who only use Google. And Korean people laugh at me because I live in Korea and I've lived here for a long time. So if I need to do anything or find any restaurant or anything, the first thing that I do is I go to Naver. And sometimes I'm with a Korean person, they see me using Naver and they laugh. It's like, wow, Joel, you're using Naver? I thought you only use Google as a joke. But yeah, that's the most important thing, understanding that you need to actually be on both platforms when it comes to marketing.
And I want you to tell us a little bit, how do you see the marketing trends here in Korea? I want to say something that happened to us a week ago. We were writing a proposal about a hackathon to startups and also to universities. And we have also Korean teammates. So we wrote the whole proposal in English and we sent them to the Korean teammate to translate it. But when he translated it, he didn't only translate it, but he changed the approach completely. So what we learned about marketing back in Europe is that we have to focus on the benefits that we are providing to our customers. And that's what we did in the proposal. It was super clear. You're going to get this, this, and this. But our teammate, he transformed everything. And instead of saying, this is what you're going to get, he said, this is what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And this is us.
Mm-hmm.
And he told us that...
Is he Korean?
Yeah, he's Korean.
Yeah.
And he told us that here's how it works in Korean. Like, they assume what they are going to get out of what you offer, but they don't specify what are the benefits. I don't know if he just lied to us because he didn't like our proposal and he just changed it, or if that's true or not.
It's partly true from my experience, because you're having him sort of translate your plan or your project. I've noticed that in Korea, they love stories in every way. So for me, I love simplicity. So for example, if you ask a Korean person about their company name, I'm very simple, L Company.
Mm-hmm.
But they take a process about creating their logo.
Okay.
And then behind it, there has to be a big story behind it. And if you ever sit down with a Korean person, it'll be 10 to 20. It'll be a while before they actually get to what their business is about, because they love stories. I don't know if it's a cultural thing or whatever. It's just something I've noticed, that Korean people love stories. So if you're going to give a Korean person your project to sort of translate, they're not going to boil it down to what, where, when, why, who. It's about, it's more about who, the story. Who,
yes.
That's what their focus is about. And if a Korean, that's an important thing. That's something I've noticed. They just love the story aspect of things. Me personally, I'm completely different. I love black and white, simplicity.
Me too.
If somebody wants to know who I am, what I do, I get right down, hey, this is what I do for you. I do this, this, and this. And I believe it'll benefit you by doing this, this, and this. Yeah, I have some clients and I've dealt with people. If I go to their website, they love to not be specific. You'll read through their entire website and you won't quite know what the business is about.
That's so true.
I can't explain why that is. For me, if I don't know what something is about within the first 10 seconds, I lose interest or whatever it is. So I also do some consulting and for some clients. And what I'll do is I will redo their investor deck for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then depending on how good their English is, I'll actually pitch with some Korean clients. With investors, to get them investors. And so I've taken 50 page investor decks. Why your investor deck needs to be 50 pages in the first place, I don't understand. And I've had to boil it down to 8 to 12 pages. The reason why they come to me with a 50 page investor deck is because half of it is story.
Mm.
Like from year to year to year back. If their company started back in 2012, they'll go back to their origin story and say, and it'll just be everything. A lot of things that's not necessary, but they feel, okay, if this client or this investor really wants to work with me, they're going to want to know who I am, things like my history, instead of the meat and bones of what my business does. So that's, I don't know if it's a cultural thing or whatever it is, but that is, yes, that's something that I have noticed as well.
Yeah, for us, that's a really cool cultural shock, because we are like, we were taught to be super specific and super clear and don't like go with it. And it does it also apply for pitching? Like, how is this style pitching here compared to the US or Europe? Do you think it's different how people pitch?
Well, one thing that I've noticed, especially since just yesterday, I had to listen to 10 or so pitches from university students. They're sort of following the U.S. trend, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of them were, they were able to boil their pitches down to, you know, 12 slides or say, and they follow the, hey, what's our problem in the world? What's our solution? And then what does our company do? I feel like just now they're starting to really transition from long 1-hour pitches to boil it down into, you know, 12 pages or so. But yes, I would say that it is changing, but there's still, I could think of different people off the top of my head, where I know a business, a CEO, who's very successful, but just as a habit, whenever somebody visits his office, he'll pitch. Even if there's a friendly visit, he'll sit them down at a table like this, he'll put open his his presentation, he'll open up his big thing, and he'll give them a pitch, 20, 30 minutes.
What the fuck?
I don't know why he does it, but when I watch him do it, though, his presentation skills are really good because he does it every day.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So that aspect of it is really good. I would actually recommend doing that. My only issue with how he does is that it's like 30 minutes every day when he could in 2 minutes explain what his company does. So that's good practice, but I always recommend people, hey, shorten your pitch. Let people know what your company does in 10, 5 to 10 seconds, and then go into detail throughout the rest of the pitch. But don't try and build it up like it's a movie where you explain what your company does in the last scene of the movie. Tell them what you do at the very beginning, and then go into a little bit more detail of how you do what you do.
Talking about trends in Korea, do you know the book 2023 Korean Trends?
I know the book. I haven't read the latest.
So one of the key works that they are talking in this new edition is not in English yet, but one friend did it like a little workshop for us. Is the redistribution of average. And what they mean is that now the society is starting to polarize a lot. Even like either they are from one side or from the other side, but there's no average. And many, many articles or many studies are starting to say that now it's much more difficult for companies to identify their target audience because they are really polarized. So they cannot do, okay, if this person is like this and this is like this is the average, let's do the advertisement for these average people. Did you feel this polarization or not?
They market for the average
Yeah,
person.
before they used to market for the average, but now the average is not working anymore.
Correct.
That's what they are saying in this book.
In that case, I absolutely agree. And if I was giving somebody advice, I would tell them to, instead of marketing for the average consumer, be niche with who you're marketing to. So there's two different strategies. You can market for the average, but then whatever price point of your service or business that you're offering, don't expect it to be very high. But if you market to a smaller percentage of people who really specifically want whatever it is that you're selling to them, then they'll be your customer. They'll buy from you no matter what, because you're speaking directly to them. If somebody only likes this one color of masks, for me personally, this might be a weird example. This is your mask. I only wear black masks. I don't know why, but I like wearing black masks. So instead of marketing rainbow colors and having all these different colors, market specifically to this one mask and then say that it's special in some way. And whatever it is, be specific, and then you can get sort of more lifelong customers, if you will, because you're marketing. They feel like you're talking specifically to them.
Just to your customer.
Yeah, that's actually a good, I think in that case, that the book that you're meant referring to is absolutely right. I love marketing specifically to one person. If I'm writing an ad that's going to go on to, some type of Facebook or Instagram or wherever that ad is, I'll be as specific as possible, sort of. That way, when somebody sees it, they'll feel like you're talking to them, and then it really brings people in more.
And back in Europe, at least I don't know in other countries, for example, pages like Instagram, Facebook, and Google, you can be really specific to who you are targeting to.
That's true.
Does it also happen here in Korea? Does Naver, Kakao, these type of platforms also allow to be super specific to your audience, or it's more like a broad thing?
Well, actually, some of it's broad, but like I said, Korea is now following those trends. So obviously, Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, all those different types of social platforms are here in Korea, and they allow you to do targeting for your ads. So in that case, yes, they do pretty well when it comes to targeted ads here. Absolutely. Because Korea is very, they follow the US trends, in my opinion, whether it's cultural or music or whatever it is. They do follow those trends, and business is the exact same thing. If you go to a local bookstore and you see business books and marketing books, they're translating famous authors, whoever it is, whether it's Tim Ferriss or whoever, they're translating that into Korean. And so Korean people who are in the business world, although they do have their sort of their business stars and people that they follow here as well, they do pay close attention to what's happening outside of Korea and other countries. So, yeah.
And what about B2B marketing here? What are the keys of B2B in Korea?
The keys to B2B in Korea is very similar to B2B in the US. In my personal experience, you have to be a little bit more personal when it comes to B2B marketing. Basically, what I'm doing is B2B essentially, If I'm providing, I'm showing a brand how to produce content or market their services, it's B2B and B2C as well. But I would say it's very similar. There's not a huge difference when it comes to that here.
Yeah, because for me, mainly the main difference that I can feel is that there's no LinkedIn here. And like back in the US and in Europe, that's one of the main platforms for B2B marketing. So if there is no LinkedIn, is cold calling here a thing or email calling?
Okay, that's a good
Like, you know?
question. Cold calling here is not a thing.
Okay.
Cold emailing is also not really a thing.
So
How do they do it?
how do you contact people?
Cold,
It's like
first of all,
contact.
cold, if somebody cold calls you, it's they consider that spam for sure. They call it phishing. This person's trying to steal my information and scam me, that type of thing. Cold emailing does happen, but from my experience, I've had situations where I've have a client and they'll give me like their main email to run for them, so I see the type of emails that they're getting. They don't look at them. I've never really seen any business, much business happen from the cold emailing. It's possible, but from my experience, cold emailing happens, but I haven't seen a lot of business happen from it. I would recommend somebody do cold emailing, but if you're going to do cold emailing here in Korea, the less you write, for example, on a cold email, the better.
Okay.
A lot of
No
Korean,
stories in emails.
huh?
No stories in emails.
Yeah, I would write a cold email as small, simple as possible. Hey, I saw your email. I got your email from this. I just want to say, hey, I like what your brand is doing about this. And then I would stop it there. Once you get a reply, then I would go a little bit more into detail about who I am. But a lot of cold emailing here in Korea are these long scripts with your company website and your name and your email type of stuff. And from my experience, people, they don't even look at it. They just say spam, 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 spam. So being really personable and almost sounding like a regular, like not even a business person, just saying, hey, just saw this, wanted to reach out to you. Yeah. Being as personal as possible is what I would say helps when it comes to cold emails or cold calls. Cold calling in Korea would work. And I would love to experiment with this. This is actually something I think about all the time. And next year I'm gonna actually start experimenting more with cold calls and to see, this will be funny.
You look excited.
Hey, to me, because that's fun. Because I know Korean people, I see it every day. They'll answer the phone and then they're really good at like hanging up. Sorry, I'm not interested. They'll hang up and then they'll go back to what they're doing. But I would love to actually really start implementing some cold calls here. That's something I used to do in the US a lot. But I know Koreans, it's almost, yeah, it's just not a culturally a thing.
Okay, so no cold calling, no cold email, no LinkedIn. How do you do massive sales, being like, for example, a software company that you have to sell a lot of different companies? How do you reach those companies?
By the way, even though you don't see that a lot here in Korea, I would recommend somebody go ahead and do all of those things. I'm just saying, culturally, you don't see a lot of cold calls. Here in Korea, I would say mostly it's about advertising, paid ads, whether that's banner ads or paid advertising on different social media platforms. That is typically what a lot of those companies do here in Korea. What I love about even what you guys are doing is that I'm seeing a lot of non-Korean influence come in. So even as a non-Korean starting a business, how I am doing it now, 5 or 10 years ago, it would have been very difficult. But now, because a lot of non-Koreans are coming in and you have your foreigner communities here, those are really good opportunities for non-Korean business people and brands and startups to market what they're doing. But typically, if I needed to market a company tomorrow, then I'd say the fastest thing is running some paid advertising.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there is a thing in the, I don't know if it's really a thing, but I hear a lot in the US that using paid advertisement gives you like a false validation that your product or your service is good because you are paying those customers at the end. So they don't really like it. Here, I guess there is not this thought.
I can understand why somebody feels like that gives them a false sense that their brand is good. But in my opinion, I think that's smart. If you need eyeballs and you need eyeballs right now, well, then the smartest thing is within a few moments, you can set up a campaign. Once you set up a campaign, that's how you test, in my opinion, if your product is good. Back in the day, if you wanted to test if your product was good, it might take weeks, months, 6 months. Now you can test and find out if your product is good in one day, as long as you see your metrics. Okay, I paid for this many impressions, I got this many clicks, I got out of those this many clicks, I got this many buys or signups for my product. You take that data, and that's data. That's how you find out if your product that you're selling is good. So in my opinion, instead of saying no by using paid advertising or whatever, my brand isn't ready or not, I think the opposite. That's how you find out if what you're doing is worth it. How many people are clicking on it? Then you use those impressions and you get your metrics, your cost per click, or your CPM, cost per impressions, and then you get your actual numbers. Okay, out of 100 people who went to my website, 20 people bought. That's actually really crazy good. Those type of numbers are really good. That's how you know, oh yeah, I'm selling that something that people want. But let's say out of 100 people, 0 people buy or something like that. That's a really good quick test to say, okay, my product isn't quite good enough, or my copywriting, or how I explain my services isn't quite good enough. You take that data, you take that as feedback, you optimize things, then you do another test. Let's say your next time around, hey, 100 people came to my website, one person bought. Hey, I'm doing something better. 100, 2 people, 5 people, 10 people. That's how you realize or you find out if what you're doing is worth it.
You mentioned copywriting, and it remembered me like the topic of the month, like, of the this month, Chat GPT and all these AI and new technologies. I want to know your opinion about it. What do you think? How do you think this is going to affect your profession? How do you think it's going to affect the world? And especially the copywriting for me is key. Like I have to be honest, I'm not writing anymore, because I just write whatever shit comes to my mind. I put improve this text, and it's much better than what I could do in one day writing. So yeah, what do you think?
It's the end of the world.
It's the end of the world,
Yeah,
right?
it
I
might
also
be.
think that.
I haven't taken an in-depth thing of it, but I messed around with it when it first popped up on, a lot of people on Twitter were talking about it. And copywriting and being able to write good sales copy is something that I always sort of used to pride myself with. I was really happy. Like, imagine you have something that you're taking nothing. You have a product, and you have to convince people that this product is something that they want. And you do that through words. So you take your time to write out why somebody would want this, and you get a good catch line, you get a good headline, you get a good subtitles, you bring people to the website, then you have a landing page, a sales copy you have to create. And you have to really sit there and work your brain. It's like to come up with this. And it's a skill. There are good people who are good at copywriting, people who aren't good. Imagine now here you have the Chat GPT or an AI coming, and you can do that in 2 seconds now. It's kind of, I don't know, I have mixed feelings. Obviously, the
Discovery.
entrepreneur in me is thinking, hey, how can I use this software to further what I'm doing?
We have to adapt.
But now you have all these kids now who just have this, and they type it in, write me a copy or write me this for this type of product, and you can do that in 5 seconds. I have mixed feelings about it. Of course, I'm gonna keep re doing my research and see how I can use it to benefit me, but I saw one scary video of this. You know how sometimes you'll see on TikTok and you'll see a little kid, they're always wearing hoodies and they're in their computer, and then they'll have the first 5 seconds on TikTok video is, here's how to make $10,000 a month using AI. And then he'll go through it. And the one little kid went through it, and it was scary thinking, like, it was just scary. I don't know what to think about
I saw a
ChatGPT.
post in LinkedIn. One guy was mentioning that he got this month $1 million by using this Chat GPT. I don't know in which way. I didn't even want to read it, but it's crazy. But I have to say something, like in your benefits, that I've been talking with some people that know more about it, and they say that skills as storytelling or being emotional, using the jargon of the target that you are really want to touch, that's going to be something that's going to take a long time for ChatGPT to be able to reach.
True.
So there is still some years of room for you to continue doing this.
Yeah, there's still a few, obviously, improvements for it. But in my opinion, when I see how good it is already, it's a little scary.
Yeah.
But it's not just copywriting. If you write, I saw people who they're writing stories, use it to write short stories. And if you're anybody who's out there who's a writer, you know how good it feels when you finish writing something. Yeah. It feels like you just accomplished a lot. And for this software to be able to do it in 5 seconds.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, of course, I'm going to use it to my benefit because, you know, I'm not going to be like, oh, I'm not going to use it and let all these other people use it. But
but for me, that's the main problem. Like, we are going to reach a point in which there will be like a lot of information, a lot of new things coming that we're going to need to analyze what's real, what's not real. Because as you were saying, there's not only copywriting, but you can even create applications with AI.
Right.
You can say, can you do an application that does this, this, and this? And it creates that application. So how many startups will be launched each day in a future?
As we speak, people are using that technology to launch startups.
Right now.
They're using the no-code startups. They're using... the first thing I typed in to ChatGPT when I first found out about it is, how can I use AI to make money? How can I use AI to create a startup or create a code to do this? And it gave me a long list of answers of how I can use it to better my business. So obviously it's very intelligent. I know it goes up only up to 2021 right now, but of course it's still good enough. And as we speak, people are going to be using over the next month, not you say in the next few years, over the next couple weeks and months, people are going to be using it to create startups, help
design
create
also. Like now, digital designs will disappear. Like freelancers will disappear.
Yeah, a lot of people who were on, you know, Fiverr or these type of websites doing freelance work, you have a whole lot of competition right now. So I'd say, hey, whatever you're doing, you got to make a move right now to either do it better or grow your business, or you're going to go extinct. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but on the other side, I think we also have one good part that I believe personal relationships will take a better position in the future, will be more important, as we are not going to be able to know if we are talking with a robot or not. I think these type of things will come, and that's where I think we should train for. So still, I'm not that desperate, but let's see what happens.
That's you. I feel desperate. I feel like, how am I going to beat these machines? That's how I feel right now. I'm not somebody who's so happy about AI. I'm very skeptic, and I think, is this going to be good for mankind and humankind? That's how I feel, but that's just my personal
opinion. You know that Elon Musk invested $5 billion for a foundation that is trying to prevent the bad
sides.
The bad sides of AI. $5 billion.
I say that's money well spent.
Absolutely. Holy shit. Okay, so tell me a bit about your team. I know, like, you are working also here. We have one of your teammates. Do you have someone else in your team?
Total is 5, I'd say, right now. And then we're slowly growing. I just had another interview yesterday. So you've met EO. He's sort of my right-hand man.
Wait, is that the one that you met in a bar?
Yeah, that's how I first met him. Some people, like, when they hire people, they want to hire somebody with a long list of resume, and you know what I mean? They have a long resume, but I hired people who I could sort of teach what I know from scratch. Sometimes I noticed in the past when working with people who have their long history of maybe they, you know, I'm not knocking people who go to school. You know, I didn't go to school, but when people come into your network and they have all these different ideas of how things should go, you kind of clash with them. So my main team members are all people who I sort of taught myself, because it's my company, my style of how to market in these different areas. We have a video team, a couple video guys, editors as well. We have a team who just focus on creating content and articles every day.
Do they use
They're
ChatGPT?
not using that's
They
a, they're
sure
not.
use it.
Just but and they're, because they're doing so well, but
Maybe they are using that they are not telling you.
no, they're not using it because I can tell by their writing style that they're not using it yet. But people who love writing, you can tell they're not going to want to switch. The writer who I have right now, because you love writing, it's like your passion, it's like your art time, your, you know, it's what you do. So all of a sudden, if you tell somebody, hey, type in, don't write, just type it into the AI, they're like, you know,
Feels like
it feels like they're
replaced.
cheating
Yeah,
to
true.
someone who loves to write. So yeah, team right now, I believe in having a small team of people who are workaholics like I am, who love to work. But we're slowly growing. But I love having a small, close team. Yeah.
Do you have any projections for next year?
Projections for next year. Yeah, we have a lot of projections for next year. One thing that my company also does, we don't just deal with clients who want marketing. Depending on what their brand is or whatever product there is, we'll actually do sort of a partnership with them. So instead of taking money from them and then marketing, what we'll do is we'll, for example, we have a clothing company line as well. We'll do all the marketing and then we'll sort of split to a revenue share for the product. We also do that as well. So in next year, 2023, more partnerships, more brand partnerships. And having to do with clothing as well and skincare as well, and just continue to grow. We're successful when our clients are successful, because I love getting in the nitty-gritty and learning about different companies and helping them grow. So that's what I expect for 2023, just more of that. Growing the team slightly, focusing on some of our brands, and we almost feel like we're a holdings company as well, because we don't just do consulting. We have our own brands too that we're launching next year. So I'm looking forward to that as well.
What's been your most exciting client so far?
My most exciting
Yeah, one
client.
that you enjoyed a lot working with.
Well, I enjoyed working with the Korea Table Tennis Association because they know me in
Amir, right?
Korea.
Amir?
No, that Amir is another client.
Okay.
I actually worked with the Korea Tables Association here in Korea. They brought me on to help with their investor relations. And that was fun because, number one, I'm a professional table tennis player. So it almost felt full circle to be able to work with them. That specific project that I was doing with them is they were hosting the 2024 World Championships. So my goal was to work with them and try and do a little lobbying and doing a lot of marketing for them to get Korea to host those games in 2024, and we were successful. It came down to Korea, and then India was involved. I think Argentina and there was Sweden and a couple other countries. Korea won, but that was fun because it was table tennis, and I got to travel a lot with them. Got to hang out with the national table tennis team here in Korea. Yeah, every client is fun, but that had a sort of a special place in my heart because I'm a table tennis player myself. So,
That's great. I have five more like little questions that we do to all of our interviewees.
sure.
You are gonna be the first one who's gonna receive these questions. We are starting with you. So the first one would be, what is the best advice that you ever received?
The best advice that I have ever received.
It can be in any sense of your life, like business-wise, personal-wise.
I have one that's super cliche,
Well, it doesn't
but
matter.
I'll say it anyway, just because of who said it to me. It's a Korean guy. He told me step by step. The reason why I'm saying whatever you're doing, take it step by step, is because the Korean guy who told me that is a close friend of mine, but he can't speak English, but he knows step by step.
So cute.
And I was, this was a long time ago, and I was doing, starting an adventure here, but I wanted to really for it to take off right away. And we were speaking in Korean, and in the middle of speaking Korean, he goes, Joel, step by step. And it's funny because he was absolutely right. instead of, you know, shooting for, you know, going broke from the beginning, I would really recommend people to break down their goals to a month by month basis, week by week basis. And once you see yourself checking off, you know, your to-do list and things like that, week by week, you'll feel really good and you'll really feel like you're making progress. If you're someone like me and you have really big, lofty goals, it's good to have big, lofty goals, but you can sort of get depressed if you feel like you're not really making way and progressing. So, yeah, it's super cliche, but I'll say, hey, take things step by step. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What's the proudest moment in your career?
My business career?
Yes.
The proudest moment in my business
career? Yeah, one moment
career.
That you felt
or like
yeah,
also happiest.
I'm a boss.
I'm a boss.
All days I feel like a boss.
Well, I feel like that every day, but there are certain moments where you really feel like that. For me,
tell me what.
For me, it depends on who I'm take a meeting with, or who I'm dealing with. So I've met a few different billionaires in my life, and I won't name drop, but there was a billionaire I was hanging with out with last year, and we were on his plane.
Okay.
And we were on, he has a couple different planes, but we were on his, you'll know him if I mention him, but so I won't mention him, but just to sit there for a couple hours and when I meet somebody at that level and just talk, and I've, because I've dealt with those type of, I know people 50 million plus personal net worth, 100 million, but this was the first time to really just sit and mingle with a billionaire like that, and just to talk about travel and food and culture. And it's, you know, you work so hard to get to that level, and when you have these type of conversations, they're just like enjoying life, like the finer things in life, and you have those type of conversations. And it was another one of those moments where I felt like, oh, this is what the good life feels like, in that type of a sense. Obviously you have to work very hard to get to that level, but it was in those moments when I meet people like that, and I meet people like that all the time. But in those moments, I feel like, hey, this is what it feels like to be on the top. And I remember those moments, and I think back to those moments all the time. Yeah, that's a moment I feel like, you know, that was a good moment for me. I've had moments like that, being in very wealthy people's, you know, homes, and just over wine and steak, just talking about business and life. Yeah, those are the moments that I appreciate. Yeah.
Cool.
Amazing. Okay, maybe this question is not that happy. Like, what's your most annoying habit?
My personal and most annoying habit?
Everyone has a super annoying habit. I do have a lot.
That I hate or that I do?
That you do and you hate.
Yeah.
A habit that I do and I hate.
You don't have any habit? Like, maybe something like that you usually do and you're, oh, I do this.
Non-business related, a habit that I do.
Whatever in your life.
Man, it's hard because the habits are done unconsciously. So you'd have to ask somebody around me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a habit that I do that I don't know. I don't know, man. That's because it's a habit. How would I know?
Okay, well.
If you're talking about habits, I read a really good book that everybody should read, though. OG Mandingo, The Salesman's Prayer. I'd recommend this book. I think I read it when I was in high school, and I think it used to be recommended reading in schools. I doubt anymore. But in the book, it gives you a bunch of rules for life, essentially. Mm-hmm. And one of the rules is form good habits and become their slave. And the book was talking about everybody has habits, whether you know it or not. And if everybody has a habit, your goal should be to form good habits and become a slave to those habits. So that's something that I've always thought of since I was very small. So I've always had these different experiments in my life where I try to create new habits. And I think it's 3 weeks to form a good habit.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, my habits, I'm very in tune to what my habits are, but maybe this might sound crazy to tell you that I don't have any bad habits, but
that's amazing. If you don't have it, that's crazy. You said, like, you answered this question before, but I was going to ask you for the last question, if you could recommend one source of learning, one book, one podcast, or one author that you love, that you feel we have to know.
This is a good question. If you would have asked me this when I was younger, I would have told you like 4-hour work week or something like that. But my personality, you know, 4-hour work week, Tim
Yes.
Ferriss. Now I regret ever reading that book. Because ever since I read that when I was maybe 16. So instead of working, like now I'm a workaholic and I work all day, every day. But until, you know, my mid-20s, I believed in working less and trying to, you know, only work 4 hours a work week, which is what I did. Because I was traveling and I still had a business in the U.S. that I was doing and I was still playing ping pong. So I'd recommend people read, because there's a big trend these days, have a balanced life and things like that. I would recommend people to go all in. And to read books and digest content and podcasts that really reinforce the idea of going all in and working hard, as hard as possible. Because there's going to be a time where you're versus other person in your industry. And there's going to be a time soon where it's not you versus another person. It's you versus AI or something. So no matter what
so
you're doing... I know we ended up talking about AI the whole podcast, but I'd tell people, hey, view podcasts and read books and have it as background noise, whatever keeps you working throughout the day. That's my advice when it comes to what type of content I think people should consume.
Amazing. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Joel, for this amazing workshop about marketing in Korea. I think it's super useful for us, the first ones, and for our audience, I'm sure that also. So I hope to see you in a like next year successful as now. And yeah, and see you next week, all of you.
Thank you.
Thanks, you guys. Thanks for coming.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
If you want to keep updated on the Korea startup ecosystem, don't forget to follow us. And if you're an entrepreneur who has something to share with the community, please send us a message to contact@koreastartupguide.com. We will be more than happy to talk to you. See you next week.